The 1998 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 191, the Thursday evening session entitled Political Parity in Mormondom, Sizing Up the Changes, with panelists Jan Faree, Ray Briscoe, Scott Howell, Rob Bishop, and Cheryl May. The chair is Eric Jones. Music by Lee Hughes, and the pianist is Bing Young.
Gentlemen, call this session to order. My name is Bill Quist, and I'll explain in a moment while I'm here. First, we'll have the prayer by Dean May, and Eric Jones is not here, and that'll be followed by a vocal song by Lee Hughes and Bing Young, and then I will explain my presence and introduce the panel. So, Dean, if you'd come forward.
Our Father in heaven, we thank thee for the privilege of being here together with friends and associates and family and others who love the gospel. And we pray for thy blessing to be with us, that we might be able to combine in our activities tonight our spiritual understanding and our intellectual understandings and enhance our lives through this ongoing effort. And these blessings we pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you very much. Now an explanation as to why I'm here instead of Greg Jones. Some of you know, but probably not very many, my wife is the business manager for Sunstone. She called me at my office this morning and said, if you need to get in touch with me, you can call the office and they'll give you a cellular phone number that I can't remember, and you can call that and it'll ring. And something came up and I decided, well, I'll try it. So I called the office to find out it's a Denver, Colorado cell phone that's here. So I'll call Denver anyway, you know, and I'm only 2 miles away. And so I called, and the thing comes on and said, the cellular phone you were calling does not answer. Well, gee, that's interesting. So I waited a little while longer, a couple hours, and called again and got the same response. And I thought, if I'm having trouble, I better get over there and tell them. So I put a sign on the door, be back in 45 minutes, and drove over here and told my wife this. And just as we were discussing this, Eric Jones walked up and said, do you know where Elbert is? And we both said, no. And he said, well, I have to leave. I just got word that my sister has been killed in an auto accident in Spanish Fork Canyon. And so that's why you have Bill Quist here instead of Eric Jones. And then the discussion was who was going to chair this session, and I said, shoot, I'll chair it. So my wife said, well, let me look it up and tell you what it is. And she looked it up, and she said, this is made for you. Now, for those of you who don't know anything else about Bill Quist is chairman of the Salt Lake County Republican Party. So there you have it. Now, on with the program, and if you're inclined, and I hope you are, you'll give some kind thoughts and a prayer for Eric and his family. All right, this past February, the first president's, that also explains why I'm a little bit unprepared. The letter from the first presidency, which is I'll discuss it very briefly in a moment, Greg has with him. I can't read it. And this one, so we'll have to do without. This past February, the first presidency sent forth a letter encouraging church members to become more actively involved in politics, particularly in the political party of their choice. Mr. Bishop, here. You never did before. Was this an attempt to achieve political parity within the church of Utah? Some interpreted the church's action so, but its net effect seemed seemingly to increase the number of Republicans filing for political candidacy. In Utah. A surprising thing happened in April, though, when the Salt Lake Tribune requested comments from the church to the follow-up story of the February letter. Rather than the expected bland statement about the need for community-minded church members, Elder Marlon J. K. Jensen, a member of the First Quorum of 70, I believe that's an error. I think he's a member of the Second Quorum. Does anybody know for positive? It is first? Okay. Thank you. And a longtime Democrat granted a full interview to the Tribune that constitutes perhaps the strongest church action toward party parity since the 19th century. Elder Jensen laid several controversial Utah problems at the feet of the Republican leaders, said the church in Utah need Democrats. Elder Jensen's words continued to buzz the Utah political scene. Will this call be heeded? And I interpret that, will the call that Utahns become Democrats be heeded? Will the Mormons flock to the Democratic Party, or will something hell freeze over first? I'm just reading it. Five knowledgeable politicos size up the chances of the Democrats gaining a toehold in Mormon Utah culture. Now, let me say about the five, they are all here representing themselves. They do not represent the church. They do not represent a political party, and that goes for the two who are prominent in Utah politics. And as chairman of the county party, I can name a few people I wish would become Democrats. I shall now introduce the... You know something I don't? I shall now introduce the panel. In the purple here is Jan Ferry. She is a public policy advocate for children and people with disabilities. And I, sad to say, I don't know any more about her. If she has something she'd like to have known, I'd be happy to hear from you at a later moment. A Ray Briscoe, historian, writer, and president of Insight Research. Scott Howell, Democrat leader, Utah Senate. It's interesting, isn't it? I'll move this in a minute, but you'll see that the two most active in politics are wearing coats. Except me, and I came direct from the office. And from where I work, I'm dressed up. Okay, and then we have Rob Bishop. Raise your hand.
With socks, Jim.
And he has socks, or do you mean I have socks?
We both do,
good. Rob Bishop is a school teacher in Box Elder County, Brigham City. He is chair of the Utah Republican Party, former Speaker of the House of Representatives here in Utah. Cheryl May. On the end, she's PhD in international politics at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Now, isn't that a contradiction of terms? Law and diplomacy? All right, at Tufts University, and she's an adjunct associate professor of political science at the University of Utah. And I presume she commutes during the week to teach at both?
Both colleges?
Yeah. My wife's an adjunct here at this school, and she commutes almost daily. So we will hear from them in that order, but Jan, we'll wait a moment for you while I rearrange the furniture.
You didn't think I could do that, huh? And then I'll sit over here in the corner where I'm least dangerous. No, I'll sit down here.
Oops. This is not going to be friendly to somebody 5'1". Okay.
Is that better?
Is this all right? Okay, that's probably okay. We were visiting before we came up on the stand, and we have prepared in in different ways. And mine is a very prepared talk. After I started presenting before the Utah State Legislature, I spoke from outlines. And if you want to work with the legislature, you have to be very concise and tight and say it. And so I write everything. So mine might be the most formal. I have always been interested in folk music and folk art. One of the things I have learned to create is Ukrainian Easter eggs, pysanky. I love the symbolism and spirituality of the eggs. Even the colors have meaning. This is an ostrich egg I made for one of my sisters a few years ago. I begin with an egg. I have the end in mind, the designs and the colors I will use. I begin with the plain egg and apply wax with a very small tool called a kiska to the areas I want to stay the natural color. The egg is dyed over and over again with the lightest color first, progressing to the darkest color. The colors become richer because of what is underneath. Even if you want to only have a two-color egg, yellow must be used or the top color will not be bright, vibrant. It will appear dull and definitely will be less beautiful. Pysanky are a metaphor for life. We are ever influenced by the events of our lives and can grow in depth and beauty as the dyes of experience wash over us. When the letter from the First Presidency encouraging members to be involved in the political activity was read in our Relief Society and passed around last winter, I was struck by the uniqueness of the statement and kept the letter for myself. Then in April, when the interview with Elder Jensen was published in the Salt Lake Tribune, I rejoiced. In fact, one of my colleagues said that she could hear me cheering at her house several miles away. Reading that article brought a change in my life. Perhaps I had been a latent Democrat, as Elder Jensen described, and it was time for me to step forward. I understood his statement about needing a balance in political parties so that better dialogue can occur. He said, "Any time you don't have the dialogue and the give and take that a democratic process provides, you're going to be poorer for it in the long run." What he said rang true to my experience for the 12 years I have advocated for children other than my own. My words are the confessions of a latent Democrat. Growing up near San Francisco, I knew that my father was a Republican and my mother was a Democrat. However, I did not hear party politics discussed. I heard issues. I also saw the example of service from my parents. Not only did they serve the church, but the community. My father was the first male PTA president in our town, and he went on to serve on the local school board for 20 years. After moving to Utah, Dad volunteered at the University of Utah Natural History Museum, at the Arboretum, and for the Diabetes Association. Both Mom and Dad worked at the Community Service Council, delivering food and love to other elderly people. My parents continued to do volunteer work until just a few years ago when my mother turned 80 and my father's shoulders could no longer carry boxes of food. People, issues, and service, they are what is important. How to create solutions. As I saw the good works my parents did in the community and studied social studies in school, I learned to honor my country and saw that there was goodness in government. I have continued to hold that opinion. Elder Jensen said, "There is a need in order for the gospel to be preached and carried off to all the world, to have an environment of righteousness in which that can occur. And in a word, without a good neighborhood and a good community, it's very difficult to have a good family. So good government is very much in the best interest of us as a church and in the work we have to preach the gospel." Jensen also said, "It is really part of our religion to be good citizens and to do our share in the community. And it's probably related doctrinally in a way to the idea that we're not just to build up the kingdom of God, but we're also to establish his righteousness. For the first few years of our marriage, Richard and I lived in the East, including a year in Washington, D.C. We were in the East when the Watergate break-in occurred. Staying at home with our infant son, I watched the Watergate hearings. As an optimistic, romantic idealist, I was stunned by the confessions of those days and consequently chose not to identify with any political party. It appeared to me that the party system was more oriented to power and control rather than finding solutions, which would be most beneficial to the situation. That was where I was standing at the end of April. But I had many experiences along the way which colored my view of life. I came to know about Lowell Bunyan, to hear him speak, read some of his works, and to meet him the day I went to volunteer at the Community Service Council. Even though I had spent several very difficult years raising a son who had been born 9 weeks prematurely and survived to be faced by many challenges as he grew, I still felt that there was more for me to learn. I went to the Community Service Council to do whatever Lowell asked me to do. This was about people, issues, and service. It was finding solutions. In 1969, Lowell Bunyan gave a talk to the LDSSA about the place of a liberal in religion. As he described the attributes of a liberal, I found that those were characteristics I wanted to possess. Quote, a liberal is free from narrow prejudice, free from bigotry, or unreasonable prejudice based upon tradition and established institution, open-minded, candid. A liberal is tolerant of change and not bound by dogma. I grew up as a religious minority and had felt judgment and discrimination as I raised my son who has a disability. Free from narrow prejudice, from bigotry, and tolerant of change were positive traits to me. January 1987 found me attending my first session of the Utah State Legislature. I listened, asked questions, and learned while seeking solutions for extremely complex problems. However, through the years since then, I have seen and heard things that disturb me. One spring, I attended the Salt Lake County Democratic Convention. Looking over the program, I decided to attend an early morning women's caucus. Various candidates came in to talk with the women. I watched as some of the women rudely attacked male LDS candidates when the men did not answer their questions about abortion in the way they desired. This was not an attempt to solve a problem within the party. It was a way to gain control. It meant it was mean-spirited as opposed to solution-oriented. A few years later, I was working on the lead team to pass a bill. One member of the Republican House leadership did not like the woman who had spent many hours over many months preparing the bill and gaining support for it. This man told her that he didn't want to see her in the Capitol. Of course, no one has the right to ban another from the Capitol. But instead of possibly compromising the passage of the bill, she stayed away until the vote was taken. Even then, I was worried that if he saw her, the bill might be in jeopardy. This is an example of unrighteous dominion. Not long ago, two new members of the House of Representatives were engaged in debate about a bill on the House floor. They lived in neighboring districts. One was an LDS Democratic woman. The other was an LDS Republican man. The man said that his school district did not oppose this bill. As he spoke, the woman called the school district and asked how they felt about the bill. Then she rose to say that she had just spoken with the district and that they opposed the bill. Later that day, when the House took a break, the man confronted the woman and pushed her up against a wall. He told her that he never wanted her to embarrass him in front of his colleagues again. She responded that she supposed that they were there for different reasons. She was there to tell the truth. This is a form of coercion in order to maintain power. One spring, I decided to attend our neighborhood Democratic caucus. Many people attended, including some prominent members of the party. The candidates for delegate, including myself, were asked what their stand on abortion was. Although I lost by only a few votes, I know that I probably did not give the correct answer. Again, there was no attempt to solve the differences among the constituents. Just 2 years ago, I decided to attend our neighborhood Republican caucus. Again, there was no attempt to truly discuss issues or bring the group to a consensus point of view. This was not about people, issues, service, or solutions. It appeared to me that there was no place for me within a political party. I would continue to be an independent and a Lowell Bunyan liberal who walks by faith and lives by hope. Many colors have been added to the pasanka of my life, and there is still opportunity for more color. Back to the interview with Elder Jensen. Quote, "It is not in our best interest to be known as a one-party church. The national fortunes of the parties ebb and flow. Whereas the Republicans may clearly have the upper hand today, in another 10 years they may not. So there are just so many reasons, I think, to have a robust multi-party system going locally and nationally for us, as well as the international responsibility we feel, that's at the heart of this as well. I guess we would probably hope that people wouldn't abandon a party necessarily because it had a philosophy or two that may not square with Mormonism, because parties in their philosophies ebb and flow. I think the main thing is to stay involved and work within the existing framework. Work for changes if they need to be brought about." Still, Elder Jensen, "My own personal hope would be that this letter would be read broadly enough to encourage someone who is a latent Democrat or who might be considering that affiliation to say, 'Gee, I could do this.' Marlon Jensen convinced me that, 'Gee, I can do this,' in spite of my fears about the party system being overly controlling and the lust for power, I'm going to add my color to the Democratic Party. I hope that if it gets too crazy, I won't pull my hair and go running out the door with my blood pressure rising. And this has happened to me. I will try to attend neighborhood caucuses and bring about positive changes when they are needed. I may not be able to stay out of Republican primaries, sorry, Rob, because I always want the best candidate to win. And I will never vote a straight party ticket. But I'm going to give this a shot. As I have dyed the sag of my political life, there have been layer upon layer of experiences which have woven themselves into a complex, rich design. The colors have represented various points of view and opinions. Sometimes the design had to be altered. I never expected to have a child who would have more special needs than other children. I never expected to find myself serving on many state committees, advocating at the legislature, and overcoming the shyness which is common in my family. I will continue being concerned about people, issues, service, and solutions. The die is ready and waiting, and I will add another color to the pasanka of my life."
Thank you very much. And thank you for that wonderful song. That was beautiful. I'm not going to try to hide my bias. I'd like to give a little bit more of a background. I started doing research in 1966 with Dan Jones. We both taught at the same high school and got involved with research together for a long, long, long time, and then we finally split our corporations. I and Dan has become the George Gallup, and I've become the speaker. So he makes the money, and he's a very fine researcher. My politics is built around education. I help get Republicans elected. My background is more Democratic in the Democratic Party, and I've been 15 years. That sets any tones at all. And been in many, many discussions there and have challenged many, many people. I've never had anybody take the challenge. But I'll formulate the question, and this will show you my bias. Resolved that the Doctrine and Covenants is closer to the history of the Democratic Party than the Republican Party for the last 50 years. And I'll beat you in that debate any day you want to take me, okay? You're on. Okay. Now, I'm going to try to stay as much as I can as close to history. I'm going to mix church and state together in terms of trying to talk about research, and I'm going to take the first 70 years of the history of the church and say that Brigham Young and Joseph Smith made political errors in the administration of the church. They had a lot of successes as well. But they had a lot to learn, and they were just learning how to run a major growing organization. When we, about the time of statehood, and by that time we're to the sixth president of the church, Joseph F. Smith, and you had three prophets in there whose politics was pretty much built around the issue of polygamy. And I thought they handled it quite well. I think they did a very good job in terms of bridging that gap and helping Utah get into the Union. When we became a state in the 1890s, 1896, the president of the church, of course, was Joseph, shortly after, Joseph F. Smith becomes the president of the church in 1901. And immediately you had people wanting to be senators and representatives, and two of them were leaders in the church, one a 70 and one an apostle, Moses Thatcher and B.H. Roberts, and they both filed for election. And Joseph F. Smith, I think the first political act after we became a state, and Moses Thatcher, they were both told they had no right to run for a political office without the benefit of the blessings of the president of the church, because they were assigned and they were called to do ecclesiastical work. B.H. Roberts repented. Moses Thatcher was excommunicated in that process. And I think that's the first major political act in terms after statehood occurred. Roberts later ran again and was elected, but could not get his seat in Congress because the House of Representatives can always choose whether they want to seat their people or not, and they chose by 268-50 not to seat a person who had come from Utah. And of course, Smoot got elected shortly after that, and it took 3 years of trials for Smoot to become a seated senator. All kinds of trials. We could talk for 30 minutes on. We could talk for 2 or 3 days on that subject alone. But Smoot did become a stalwart of the Republican Party, a very important member of the Republican Party, and a strength of the Republican Party for a long, long time. Now, he was an apostle while he was a senator and a Republican. I heard one person say that He loved the church, and he was always willing to do what. But he was always a Republican. That was his first. And I think on the issue of the letter of Elder Jensen is what comes first. Where's your heart? Where's your heart? Is it with your party, or is it with the church? And I think you have to answer that question for yourself. And then if you answer that question for yourself, I think it'll say an awful lot about who you are. How you see history tells more about who you are than about what happened. And I think that's true of this entire issue. By and large, the church pretty much and Utah kind of got involved in and was a part of the American political system by about 1920. Pretty much into the flow of things. In the 1920s, Utah was pretty much Republican. in the 1930s, it was pretty much Democratic. And that was the way the nation was. The 20s in the United States was a Republican era. The 30s in the United States was a Democratic era. Of course, that was the Depression days and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, it was during that period of time in 1932 that a prophet of the church got involved in politics again, and that was Heber J. Grant. Heber J. Grant endorsed Alf Landon. Alf Landon carried Kansas and Maine. He also asked the saints in conference to maintain prohibition. And Utah became the last state that got rid of prohibition. It broke his heart. It really broke his heart. Because I think that they did not want a leader of the church telling them how to think politically. Now, that's just a guess on my part, because I wasn't back there then, but that's my idea. The real interesting stuff starts in the 40s after the Second World War. The Democratic Party is in pretty good shape, partly because the McConkies are Democrats, and one of the apostles is a son-in-law to the prophet of the church. That kind of helps. Keeps things open dialogue, at the least. But after the Second World War was over, America went into the McCarthy era. And many of you can remember that period. I saw a letter to the editors about 2 weeks ago, and I subscribed to both newspapers. Got to read them, both of you. You're going to get it all. Praising McCarthy. Can you imagine that? After all these years, saying what a great guy McCarthy was and how important he was. My goodness, somebody lost their historical perspective. But Ezra Taft Benson got caught up in that period of time. His sons were a part of the John Birch Society, and Ezra Taft Benson, his apostle, spoke about it quite a bit. And then he went into the cabinet of Eisenhower. And I think his influence was felt. I really do. I think his influence was felt. There were people who didn't agree with him. I'm gonna share my own self in this particular process. I told my neighbor one time, and he later became my bishop and then my state president. And this shows you what. And I've repented of this, and I do think it's a need of repentance. I'm serious about this. I told him that if Ezra Taft Benson ever became the prophet of the church, I'd leave it. And I've come to love Ezra Taft Benson. And I don't think he ever changed his political view. I changed mine. I still consider myself a liberal. But I sure changed my idea about prophets and my idea about leadership and what that's all about. By the time we get to 1972, things are pretty much even between Democrats and Republicans. And I really believe I have a pretty good view of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I've done a lot of research. I've done more research for Republicans than Democrats. They got more money. If you want to go to a Republican convention, even a county convention, tens of thousands of dollars are spent. Go to a Democratic convention, they're selling cupcakes in the back to be able to make enough money to make it run. And I've seen that literally. I've seen that literally. So, but by 1972, there was balance between Democrats and Republicans in the state of Utah, and then an event happened nationally that changed it. And it was the political philosophy of George McGovern. And if you recall, he tried to broaden the Democratic Party to let all people have a say. Remember, there had to be so many women. There had to be. They were even counting demographically the number of Native Americans, the number of blacks, the number of Hispanics, and every division that you could possibly have. And they allowed every group to debate every issue they want. So television is in the homes of the people of Utah, and they turn on the television set, and here you got hippie Democrats debating that marijuana ought to be an entitlement program. Well, the housewives who watch television were not politically sophisticated enough to understand that that was only talk. And from that, the Republicans, and I do believe that Republicans have better administration than Democrats, although I'll argue with that on governorship in the state of Utah, because we've had some excellent Democratic governors as well as excellent Republican governors. But in the party area, these business people tend to be better organized. You know, Will Rogers, I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat. There's a lot of truth to that. You know, there's a and I think the Republican Party more effectively picked up the ball and ran with that and convinced large numbers of people that the Republican Party is the party of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think they've been exceedingly effective. And I don't think you can blame the Mormon Church for that. I really don't. I don't think it's their fault at all. When Joseph Fielding Smith died, Harold B. Lee was in there for such a short period of time that I don't think he had any real impact. I think Spencer W. Kimball was apolitical. He didn't care about Democrats or Republicans. And I think he had to be to accomplish what he did with reference to the extension of the priesthood to all worthy males. I don't think he could have done that had he been in a political party philosophically. Howard W. Hunter was there for such a short time, and I think that when the president of the church, sustaining member of the LDS Church, I don't think you got an argument. I really don't. Now, you can argue about, you know, he gave a speech about women working and not working and those sorts of things, and that caused hell at the church office building for a few days, but we all got over that. I also believe that Gordon B. Hinckley is apolitical, but I don't. It's kind of hard to judge a sitting prophet, and maybe it's kind of hard to judge a prophet, period. They shouldn't even try. I get off that in a hurry. But the events after the McGovern election of 1972 set a stage that the Republicans reaped, and reaped it very, very well. Now, having worked at the church office building for 15 years, I can tell you this. I've been retired for a year and a half. But you do not put a 70 in front of the Salt Lake Tribune without the first presidency's okay. You don't. There's no way. Now, Of course, I went out and rallied everybody, you know, call and say thank you. And I know that there were a lot of people who were very angry about that, exceedingly angry about that. The telephone calls, because I used to work for the public affairs division before I became a part of the research division, and I know how that thing works. And they had calls coming both ways, and they had their phones were hot for a few days. I know, and I wasn't working there. I was out beating up the heat so we could get some phone calls on our side. Let me conclude real quickly, if I may, and give you some idea. I have worked for a lot of Republicans, and Republicans are wonderful people. I am a Democrat. Some of my best friends are Republicans. I've done work for a lot of quality legislators and governors. I have great respect for the governor of this state. I really do. I think he's a fine, fine man. And I think he's becoming a really fine governor. I really believe that. But something's happened because of the preponderance of Republicans. The Republican Party is beginning to fracture, and they're having a hard time keeping it together. And it's my opinion that about 25 to 35% of the Republican Party are right-wing loonies. The very fact that the governor, for the first time, puts out of his budget money to help Republicans get elected because those other people are trying to take them out, and then they get mad because, you know, they get angry because they're doing the same thing that the governor did and trying to maintain the integrity of the Republican Party. Now, most of the Republican Party are just fine conservative people. They've got a group that, if they got the majority vote, would be an embarrassment to the state of Utah. Now, the Democratic Party needs to get shook also. I believe that the Democratic Party has a number of Democrats who would rather be Democrats and not associate with Mormons than win an election. I really believe that. The Democratic Party is fractured between Mormons and non-Mormons, and they can't bridge the great gap. And until they can solve that problem, they will never come back in the state of Utah. Now, the Republicans can help them come back by becoming corrupt. I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. Now, I don't believe that they are corrupt, and I didn't suggest that they are. But if you maintain it over many, many years, like in the South when the Democrats held office for 100 years, it did become corrupt. And if they maintain themselves, they will. Power tends to corrupt. And it is in the interest of the church to have a balanced political system in the state of Utah. I've done, in my research, if you know of Kossin, K-O-S-S-I-N, the Mormon church is the most Republican church in the United States. And when the politics change and the Democrats are nationally in power, both legislative and presidentially, and it will happen, it does happen, you know, folks, and then you want something out of the state of Utah after it's straight Republican, just try to get it. Okay.
It always is a interesting experience to come here and be with you. I've had this opportunity one other time, but I haven't had the opportunity of hearing such great music. And Bing and Lee, I'll tell you, that pierced my soul. It was very good and so appropriate. I mean, the hotbed of all politics is Jerusalem. And if you've ever been over there, it's an experience in and of itself. I had the great honor of knowing Yitzhak Rabin on a personal level, and what admiration he had for doing the right things for the right reasons. So that was a terrific song. Thank you. My heart's heavy tonight for Eric. What a terrific young man, and what a challenge you'll have. And I was sitting here thinking, here we are gathered as saints talking about politics, but isn't it good to know that the fundamental belief of a premortal existence and an afterlife will sustain Eric and help him. My uncle today, it just is incredible, ended his battle with cancer this afternoon. So I think the Lord's called home some stalwarts today, and maybe they're here with us laughing as they talk about Democrats and Republicans up in heaven. My uncle was a Republican, and I know Eric's sister was a Democrat, so maybe they keep score, I'm not sure. It's great to look out in the audience and see such good friends. It's always great to have C. Everett Koop here. I spoke at the Rotary about 4 or 5 years ago, and as many of you know, I've been the anti-tobacco king of the hill. And when I looked down there, I saw Adrian. I thought, wow, this rotary's really brought in some heavy artillery to help me in this anti-tobacco. Adrian plays the piano about like you do, Bing. I'll tell you, it's great. J.D. Williams, who and his wife, Bee, who's a noted author. J.D. was a great professor of mine. And others out here in the audience, it's good to be here. It feels good. I could only start by seconding Jan's comments. I think they were terrific. And I was thinking what could be better, and then Ray spoke, and quite frankly, I think we ought to have another song and go home, and I think that'll be good. When Bill introduced himself to me over here, he introduced me himself as the enemy. Now, in my business, I'm never quite sure what that means. That could mean one of the mechanical contractors who I ran a bill to try and solve this terrible problem on Mechanics Lien, and we won. They think I'm the enemy, and it could be some of the drunk drivers who I ran some legislation and helped them. And so I wasn't sure what Bill meant. He said, "Oh, I'm the Salt Lake County Republican chairman." I said, thinking to myself, "That's great. They vote for me in Salt Lake County, so you're not the enemy." I really, really appreciate them. You are not the enemy. Trust me. You, yeah. Work with them on that very carefully. My wife, after I made the decision to run, informed me a couple weeks into the campaign that she was raised a Republican and had no intentions of changing. And depending on the day and the moment, she won't tell me if she voted for me or against me. It's a moving target. I have a different perspective, and I want to share this with you. We are going to be hosting the world here in the state of Utah in three and a half short years. One of my friends from the university put together a very interesting study, and we've been sharing this. I'm on the Olympic Committee, on the Oversight, Sports Oversight Committee. And what he did is he took a model and think conceptually here, shrunk the Earth's population to a village of precisely 100 people. With all the existing human ratios remaining the same, what would that population look like? Listen carefully as we go along this journey of 100 people in this newly formed creation. There'd be 57 Asians, 21 Europeans, 14 from the Western Hemisphere, both North and South, and 8 Africans. 51 would be male, 49 would be 51 would be female, 49 would be male. 70 would be non-white, and 30 would be white. 70 would be non-Christian, and only 30 Christians in this population of 100. 50% of all the wealth would be in the hands of 6 people, not the Powerball winners, but the 6 people, and all 6 would be from the United States of America. 80 would live in substandard housing, 80 out of the 100 people. 70 would be unable to read. 50 would suffer from malnutrition. 1 would be near death at birth. And only 1 would have a college degree. And much to my chagrin, no one would own a personal computer. When one considers our world from such an incredibly compressed perspective, the need for both tolerance and understanding becomes greatly and glaringly apparent. In Eric's asking me to participate tonight, he put together, or he asked me a little bit about some of the questions that I frequently get asked with regard to being a Mormon Democrat. How do other Mormons perceive you as being a Democrat? You know, that's an interesting question that I get a lot of times. It goes from the Elders Quorum meeting after I vote against the abortion bill that would take away all abortion rights and end it. That was the bill that we had about 4 years ago. No abortion, period. And I voted against that bill because on that very, very personal issue, I have nowhere to turn to but my faith. That abortion in the case of rape, incest, and health and life of the mother was in direct violation of my personal and my religious beliefs that the Republicans ran in the Senate. Walking into Elders Quorum and saying, "Welcome, today, and we'd like Brother Hal to explain to us why he voted against ending all abortion. Unknown, unprepared, but spiritually blessed by listening and relaying the experience to 30 elders. It's also an interesting commentary, being in the bishopric for the last 5.5 years, of how people perceive me. How could he be there? What happened? Thank goodness for our bishop, who confessed all the time that he was a Democrat. I think when people lose perspective of what brings us together, what sustains us, that we don't focus on the important things of life. The important things of life, of like having sales tax on food. What an immoral act for a great state who's had over $500 million in surplus, and we have another $70 million. Why wouldn't the Republicans wake up and understand that this is a great opportunity to end an immoral thing on food? With regards to education, the only thing that we take with us when we die is the intelligence that we've gained in this life. We cannot afford to put unlimited dollars in quality education. Short of ecclesiastical training, the best thing that we can do to build our society, to build our children, is to give them a quality education that starts in preschool. That's critical to a good society. And I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. That's fundamentally something this state is ignoring and leaving behind. Managing of growth. The ability to plan as Brigham Young planned. To have the vision to look forward. To have the courage that it takes to make the hard decisions instead of taking a poll every week to determine if the things that you said today are right or wrong. It takes courage to be a leader. Quite frankly, I was embarrassed that the church ever had to come out with a statement with regards to political diversity. It does us no good to align with one political party thinking that they circumscribe to all truth, because there is not all truth in either political party. But what there needs to be is statesmanship and balance. Think for a moment about the evilness and the power and the control that happened so many years in the United States Congress. The post office scandal. We could go on and on and on. And Ray said it best, ultimate power corrupts. The Book of Mormon teaches us time and time and time again, from secret closed-door meetings, secrecy, letting out, keeping out the light of democracy. There's a message here. For even my Republican friends, it does you no good to have ultimate power. You are not served well when the power is in the hands of 3 or 4 individuals. And that's what happened in the United States Congress. And it was a great day when Republicans were elected to the Congress. And it was a great day when we had an executive branch that balanced that. And we have a balanced budget. We're moving forward in this country. We're making important decisions. We're doing the right things for the right reasons. But it took a change in the attitude and beliefs of people that said enough is enough. Look at Massachusetts, the most liberal state. Their voters, Democratic voters, are smart enough to know that balance and competition breeds a better product. They elected Governor Wilden, a Republican. A Republican will be elected again there. They recognize that a legislative body of Democrats and one of Republican brings about the best thing in government. That's why I was embarrassed that members of the church couldn't see beyond the pretty picture of, oh, you have to be a Republican to be a good Mormon. And they align with us on our moral values and our welfare. I got news for you about welfare. I've been there. I've seen it. I've allowed it to happen, and I've signed the checks. And our system can learn a lot from the systems in government. And government can learn a lot from our church. there is no perfect system on welfare. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that the statement coming from the church was the greatest missionary tool that we've ever seen. Ray talked about the anti-Mormons in the Democratic Party and those that are Mormon. Now, it's very clear that there's a message. It's okay to be a Democrat and a Mormon. It's okay for you to think that you're going to vote for a Democrat as a Republican. What you really want is balance. Because when you think back to the way the world looked, there's an awful lot of Asians and an awful lot of Europeans. And we're in the majority here in this state in terms of our white Anglo-Saxon Mormon heritage. But outside of Utah, and as we leave the West, it's a pretty small minority. We'll be hosting the world here. Think to yourself for a moment of how we're going to welcome this great dichotomy of individuals throughout the world. A sad thing happened after the statement had come out from Brother Jensen. A young lady that I'm very well acquainted with decided to make her move and announce that she was a Democrat. All of a sudden, she was branded as an abortionist and a gay rights lover. What a sad commentary. The single issues of abortion and gay rights, do they hurt Utah Democrats? Well, I'm going to read to you exactly what our party platform says, and I have copies here for you. In the Democratic Party, each person has their own viewpoints. The Utah State Democratic Platform states, Utahns believe in fairness, and it isn't fair when citizens are denied the full benefits of citizenship based upon race, gender, religion, age, disability, or sexual orientation. The Utah Democratic Party encourages our government to protect against discrimination and victimization based on status. We believe that the very important public health policy should be more supportive of women in their childbearing years and help to have and raise children under the best possible circumstances. We believe a comprehensive approach to reproductive health care that protects reproductive freedom, reduces the need for abortion, and fosters the education for thoughtful, moral, and responsible decisions about sexuality, childbearing, and parenting. Utah Democrats recognize the sanctity of marriage. Marriage and family are the basic building blocks of our society. That's our platform. People say, well, it's those national Democrats. You know, that's really the problem. It's those national ones. Well, I guess that could be the problem, too, with those national Republicans. You got Christine Todd Whitman out there, the biggest pro-choice leader there is. I mean, you could go on and on. But, you know, the real essence of what Marlon was saying in that is that you go with the ebbs and the flows, and you put together what you think is the right thing to do, what you believe in your heart is the right thing to do. The best way to build a party and to build democracy is through balance. I will tell you this year that our candidates are the best we've ever had. They're Mormons and non-Mormons. They're outstanding people in our community. I believe people that you could be very proud to vote for, whether you were Republican, Democrat, or independent. In closing, failing to do the difficult things in life eventually will get you into trouble. Words of wisdom. I grew up with O.C. Tanner on this corner, Lowell Bennion on this corner, and Gordon B. Hinckley right here. That's my heritage. That's my philosophy. Those three individuals gave me more to think about and ponder about. I can remember nights of sitting with G.B., as we affectionately called him, never knowing once. Well, Marge also said he'd never live long enough to be the prophet, so I was okay. Sitting with G.B. and him telling me about life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. I think you all would be very surprised at some of the comments that he told me. Some of those very special nights in his backyard. Lo Bennion used to always question me about what was right and what was wrong, and what we could contribute to society to make it a better place. He knew that ultimate power, money, and control corrupts. Just as in the federal government, it corrupted the Democrats, that insidious cancer is starting here in Utah. And it's frightening. It's frightening to be among those people up there and to see how decisions are made. It's wrong. It's not democracy, and it's not freedom. We have a responsibility as Utahns to bring about the best we can in our democratic process. I am very grateful to be a Democrat. But you know what's more important? I'm grateful I'm a member of the church. I'm honored to be bright, intelligent individuals. I have great respect for the chairman of the Republican Party. I'm concerned, though, about his stand and what he does when it comes to guns. It frightens me when I think about the Savior and what that has to do and how the Savior stood up to those who took him on. But I'm also pleased that Rob's a teacher, doing something to bring about a better country, better citizens, building character. Thank you very much for having me. It is an honor to be here.
I realize that one should never start off by apologizing or admitting that they're nervous. But having never been in a symposium like this before, I have to admit I am here nervous. I hope that what I can give, as apparently so far the only conservative and member of the true party on the panel, I hope it can be positive, and I hope you as an audience are not viewing this as you do a presidential debate or a NASCAR race, where you simply don't care what is said or who wins. All you hope to do is be around for somebody to crash and burn. I hope I'm not your flammable entertainment here this evening. You know, in the very first election that Utah held when they were a state, this is when they were finally free of the heavy hand of the federal government, and before the federal government realized you can carry California by creating national parks in Utah, when they were free to vote the way they wanted to. In that very first election, it resulted in two Republican U.S. senators, a popularly elected Republican Congress, a Republican governor. In fact, every elected official statewide was a Republican, including an attorney general by the name of A.C. Bishop, who is no relation. Even the superintendent of public instruction was elected, and he was a Republican. The Senate was 12-6 Republican, and 31 out of 45 members of the state House were Republican. So what can I say? You know, the more things change, the more they... Yeah, like my childhood hero Yogi Berra would say, it's deja vu all over again. So I am here to tell you, and I hope to stay on topic of the article and interview, that I don't think the church creates politics. They reinforce it. And I also don't think that the Jensen interview, when the history of Utah politics is written, will be more than maybe an interesting footnote or an answer in a trivial pursuit question from a Mormon board. There are three basic concepts I want to get through here. Number one is I think Mormons became the majority party because as a reaction state of Utah to national trends, not because of anything Ezra Taft Benson said. Number two, if that position were to change and the Democrats were to move, it would require a change in their approach. And number three, no matter how many times you want to spin the Jensen interview, it still cannot be something that it never was or never intended to be. You know, when Utah was finally granted statehood, the assumption is that we had to have political balance, and although that first election kind of belies that. And all of us have anecdotal stories, which we like to repeat, on how that political balance was accomplished. But as I was reading books like Political Deliverance and essays on Utah's March to Statehood, I was impressed by how many times general authority, especially people like John Henry Smith, would emphasize the fact that in coming up with some kind of political decision-making, free agency was a principle that they would not be ignoring within the church. It was not, as George A. Smith used to say in St. George, we have come here of our own free will because we had to. I think that sometimes we de-emphasize the element of free agency in those initial decisions that were made, and because they're not quite as cute in the stories that we tell. Indeed, as has been pointed out here, when the church has gone into endorsing candidates, or when general authorities or recently retired general authorities have run for high political office, their elections have been spectacularly unsuccessful in the state of Utah, even with a predominant Mormon electorate. So I just think we happen to be fortunate to be living in a time of a Republican cycle. In the history of this state, there have been Democrat cycles and Republican cycles. They have been bigger and deeper than they are now. There have been two times two sessions in the history of the state when there are no Republicans that were in the state Senate, and two sessions when there was only one Republican. There have been two sessions when there were no Democrats in the state Senate, and four sessions when there was only one Democrat in the state Senate. There are states in this nation that have a higher percentage of Republicans in their legislature right now than are in Utah. So what I'm simply saying is the idea that Utah is a one-party state is basically crap. We are the majority party. It's not a one-party state. We have dominated. We're still a minority. We have dominated more in the past, and we probably will dominate more in the future. It's simply a reality of that. I am told by people that if you were to add up all the votes that took place, both Republican and Democrat in the state of Utah through the mid-1960s, added them together, it'd come out to about 50-50. Utah was bipartisan, going in cycles. The only constant was always that it was a conservative state. The change happened, as Dr. Briscoe said, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, when the Democratic Party made that gigantic lurch to the left and simply made it so that conservative Mormon Democrats joined the Republican Party for the same reasons that conservative Catholic Democrats and conservative Baptist Democrats and conservative Methodist Democrats in Utah joined the Republican Party at the same time. It was over national issues, things like the Equal Rights Amendment and abortion and taxes and size of government, military spending, military policy. And, of course, the fortunate that we had is the Democratic nominees of George McGovern and Jimmy Carter, who were a godsend for Republicans in Utah. That change didn't happen immediately, though. It was a gradual change. In the 60s, the 70s, and the early part of the 80s, the Democrats controlled the legislature in 74, but in that period of time, there was always one, and usually more than one, leading Democrat who had won a high-profile position. It was only in this decade that you've seen that continuum, that flow that has finally come full circle. Maybe it will stay, maybe it will change. I think it's aided this time by the fact that the president is Bill Clinton. That's helped us immensely. The fact that President Clinton's personal peccadilloes, as well as his public policy, is basically abhorred by almost all Utahns. 371 elected Democrats have switched parties since Bill Clinton was first elected and become Republicans, none of whom have been Utahns. I've tried, but none of whom have become Utahns simply because they all did it earlier. In those early 20 years before, that's when the tide started to change, and we're seeing the subtleties or the ending of that particular tide. Let me go through two other points of the article in specifics. One of the things that I think was very clear as you read between the lines of the article was that Elder Jensen was saying if the Democratic Party is going to become a majority party, that has to change. A party that will nominate a Stuart Hansen instead of a Pat Shea, or Rocky Anderson instead of a Kelly Atkinson, or won't even allow Ted Wilson to be on a primary ballot in the state of Utah, that's a party that has to have some kind of change. And I think they've recognized that. Perhaps the talk is there, but the walk isn't there. Soon after the article was published, there was a cartoon in the Logan Herald, a copyrighted cartoon, of a Democrat meeting in Utah. The podium is the stereotypical Democrat at the podium, and in the audience there are a lot of black suits and white shirts, and a lady with a CTR sweatshirt is standing up saying, "We propose we do away with the pro-abortion, gay, gun control tax, and spend liberal platform." To which the chairman is thinking to himself, "What were we smoking when we wished more Mormons were Democrats?" That's the underlying message. And it's also a two-edged sword. It is the same problem that Democrats are facing in this election that Republicans faced in the 40s and the 30s when we were the minority party at that particular time of Me Too-ism. All of the Democratic mantra of this particular election is still summarized in, "Please vote for us, we're almost Republicans." How many times have I heard the chairman of the Democratic Party say, "We will not Californicate Utah Democrats. We're not really Democrats, we're almost Republicans. We're close enough, you can have actually a chance to vote for us." That's a two-edged sword, because we simply stand back and say, "White vote for the sloppy imitation, go for the original." We face that, they are facing it, it's still the same problem. Let me also state that I say, as the final point, then I'll be very quick in getting out of here for you, that I see a difference between the Jensen article and the Jensen interview. When I read the article, I was upset. When Dan Harry called me earlier on and told me some of the quotes, I was upset. When I read the entire interview, the 10 pages of the interview, I was not upset with 9.5 pages of it. 9.5 pages were nothing more than a restatement of church position, church policy. It was pretty much standard fare. There was nothing for which I could be opposed. There were two questions which he answered. which I think that those were the basis of the particular article. Jensen has talked to our staff and acknowledged he probably went over the line on those particular questions. There is not a Mormon way of building roads. Castigating the mission president in South Africa is not one of the things you do in those types of positions. Elder Jensen is a wonderful person, very kind individual, who wears his partisanship on his sleeves. And in years past, on more than one occasion, he has apologized for somewhat blurring his positions of church and partisanship. It may happen in the future, and it doesn't make any difference. Because what I am saying is the history of this state has shown that Utahns react, reinforcement by the party, but they react to what happens on the national trend, and they follow national trends. As I look how Utah voted in those first few elections, there are very few differences between the way Utah voted and the way the rest of the West voted. For example, in that very first election when we voted for all Republicans, there were only two Democrats that won any election in any state in the West in that particular cycle. It switched over the next time with William Jennings Bryan on the issue of silver, where Utah fell right in line with that approach. So it's going to be that particular type of a trend I think I see that happens. And I hope as we start spinning the Jensen article and the interview and start discussing that as time, that we heed the advice in 2 Timothy where, to paraphrase, it simply says, they shall turn their ears from the truth and shall turn it toward the fables. There are some things that he actually said and some things we just want him to have said and can kind of read in between the lines. And I think you're seeing that from everybody who will speak here. The bottom line is simply this. No, you will not go to hell for being a Democrat. You may go to hell for voting for a Democrat. If a Democrat wins, we may be in hell, but you will not be, for just espousing that position, you will be okay. And I appreciate your time and patience. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm wondering at this moment how many of you share the feelings that I have about five-member panels. Nevertheless, I will try to fulfill my assignment on this panel as expeditiously as possible, and I really am delighted to be joining you this evening and to be discussing with you this really fascinating topic. I think my favorite Mormon Democrat experience might be one that occurred several years ago in my home ward when a fairly new member of the ward was called as the second counselor in the bishopric, and the bishop, in talking about the degree of inspiration that had been involved in him making this appointment, said, I really know very little about Brother Strong. He might be a Democrat for all I know. And there was sort of an appreciative chuckle throughout the congregation, but it is certainly true. Studies that have been done over more than a decade now, most consistently by Professor Dave Magleby at BYU, indicate that about 85%, at least 85% of active LDS people in Utah associate themselves with the Republican Party. That doesn't seem to be declining. Although I don't know that he's done any studies since the Jensen statement. I would not anticipate that there would be a huge change in allegiances merely as a result of that statement. Nevertheless, I think that it is important. Elder Jensen was clearly chosen and assigned by the brethren to make this statement, and he's been around a good while, and his views are well known. And I believe that this statement, which is part of a package, you'll notice, as has been mentioned, that went with the February statement that was a stronger reinforcement of this idea of pushing political participation, and particularly participation not just in your neighborhood watch or in your PTA or in your anti-pornography group, but in political parties, and specifically saying, run for office. And so this was sort of the second part of that. And I believe that the brethren have a legitimate concern and one that is deep-seated when they try to do what they can to encourage a redressing of what they see as a serious and very deep-seated imbalance in Utah and other Western states. And some of my co-panelists have mentioned some of the difficulties with that much of a disparity between political parties. It's very hard for a minority party when they're when they become a really tiny minority to keep the majority on its toes, to find where a particular service is not being delivered as efficiently as it should, and to generally bring up issues that are not the favorites of the party in power. The fact that political fortunes could change and that we could again become a majority democratic country or state was mentioned as one of the difficulties of having a one-party association for the church by Elder Jensen. I think equally important is that if you are constantly counted upon as having the overwhelming majority of a particular group associated with one party, that the party you're associated with takes you for granted, and they're not likely to give you very many favors either because they know you don't have any place to go. Talk to the blacks in the Democratic Party. Another difficulty, I think, that the church leaders are looking toward here relates to missionary work. If Mormons are overwhelmingly associated with Republican points of view, it's going to be tougher not only for the missionary who is out tracting. If a person behind the door, it happens to be a Democrat, they're going to tend to be rejected out of hand rather than being given any kind of opening. In addition to this, as Scott Howell indicated, we are increasingly an international church and have faithful saints who adhere to parties and philosophies that are both considerably to the right and considerably to the left of those in this country. And so a mutual toleration and respect, which I think is probably the biggest impact in reinforcing that, of Elder Jensen's statement between our two political parties that really aren't that far apart within this country are very important things to encourage. Also the fact that the Democratic adherents, the number of Democratic adherents have become relatively small in this state, means that the major political negotiations going on within the state are within the Republican Party, within the between the moderate center and the more radical right, and that tends to shift the whole political spectrum in that direction, and the opposition Democrats are really left out in the cold, and indeed them and a considerable number of the moderates. And so there's some big impacts that have resulted from the fact that we have relatively few LDS Democrats in this and other Western states. In talking about how he can be comfortable as a Mormon and a Democrat, Elder Jensen said, "Everyone who's a good Latter-day Saint is going to have to pick and choose a little bit, regardless of the party they're in. And they might be required to do a lot more of that in the future than they have in the past." And I think that several of the panelists tonight have talked about the possible basis for picking and choosing issues if you want to be a Mormon Democrat. We've talked about our communitarian heritage. We've talked about the fact that Democrats seem to have a lot more sensitivity to vast differences in wealth between the working poor and CEOs of major corporations, and that basic Christian principles of caring communities seem to have generally gained more sympathy in the Democratic than Republican Party. Gun issues, there are others that one could pick and choose. But the issues that have seemed to be the most salient in the last decade or two have been issues relating to abortion and to gay rights. And I think the most powerful has been the abortion issue. There are politicians in other states in the country who are considered loyal Democrats who nevertheless have a pro-life position. There have been, in this state, those who have wished to be and who proclaim themselves to be loyal Democrats who nevertheless advocate a pro-life position, generally a moderate pro-life position in line with the general bishop's guidelines that say that that in cases of problems for emotional or physical health problems to the mother, et cetera, that these are factors to be taken in consideration when discussing abortion. But for an important number of the leaders of the Democratic Party in Utah, a pro-choice position seems to have become a litmus test. And loyal Democrats who have wished to run for office but have not, in their view, passed that litmus test, have not been given the financial and other support that would be necessary for them to gain electoral success. You know, many people believe that the number and proportion of Mormons in Utah has been declining in recent decades. Not true. The number of Mormons in Utah reached their lowest point in about 1920, and they have been...
I'd like to make a few comments here and correct some errors that have been stated. First one, that the Republican Party has lots of money. As chairman of the Salt Lake County Republican Party, I can tell you that's an outright lie. We're hurting to pay the rent. I'll be standing at the back as you leave, and I'll be happy to take your contributions. The other thing is that I've heard this all my life about all the money they have and how all they're looking for the poor. And I look at some of the people who run for office, and, I just love to be as poor as the Kennedys. And a number of people in this state, it's an old joke. It isn't the case. The other one, they mentioned that something about takes both papers to get both sides. Well, according to the Jensen interview, the church is against the Republicans, so we can say that's the Democrat side there. And reportedly, I think it's the editor of the Tribune says when he gets Utah turned into being a Democratic state, he's out of work because that's his whole job to be here. So I don't know that you're getting a balanced view by reading both newspapers. As to the interview with Dan Harry, I'm like Rob Bishop. I was upset when I read what he wrote. I was not near as upset when I read the entire interview. There were a couple of places where Mr. Jensen, Brother Jensen, got out of line as a church member. He stated the church is neutral on politics, and then a couple of places he went into it. J.D. Williams has been quoted here tonight. Sometime back, I saw him on one of the education channels. I'm not sure whether it was BYU or University of Utah, and I don't really care. For years I have stated that, or felt and stated, that you have one-third of the people who are going to vote for the elephant, no matter who runs, and you have a third of the people who are going to vote for the donkey, no matter who runs, and you have a third of the people who are going to make the decisions. And that's the people you have to talk to, and that's the people you have to get to vote for you. You already have a third of it sewed up. It's this middle third. They're the people who run the country, and I think that's fine. Well, J.D. Williams, if I remember correctly, stated that 42% of the population, and I do not know if this was national or state, but it probably was national, are Democrats. 32% are Republicans, and 26% are independents. So my third was not a bad guess, but that's it. Am I right or wrong? Somebody know better?
That was correct about 15 years ago, but it's not correct anymore.
Not correct, okay. All right, but anyway, you still, if you're going to run the country, you have to talk to the middle third, regardless of the exact percentage. Those are the ones who run the country. And as to those who claim that... the church has caused people to move, to become Republicans and what have you. The article by Dan Harry stated that back at the turn of the century, we were a Democrat state, and we're now the other. And my response to you, Scott, and the rest of you who were Democrats is, like the bumper sticker we used to see a few years ago, if you don't feel close to God, who moved? If you Democrats can't appeal to the people, who moved? The people are still there. Now, one final comment, and then we do have a very few minutes for some questions, and that is that I'd appeal to you to give thanks and gratitude to all those who serve in public office. Give in this state enormous amounts. Scott, you may remember that during the last session I spent an afternoon up on the Hill, came into the Senate chambers, and because of my political position was accorded some courtesies that most of us don't get. I was invited to sit on the floor. I didn't have to go to the visitor's gallery. And they stopped the session and welcomed me. I was grateful for that, and it wasn't Bill Quist, it was the chairman of the party that they were welcoming. But I sat there and I looked at those people, and earlier I had been in the House of Representatives, again on the floor, not up in the visitor's gallery, and I looked at those people. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know something. Those people, regardless of what they get, quote, for pay, it's grossly insufficient for what they give. I happen to be a very close friend with Ray Short, Republican in the House. As I got to know his political agenda, and I mean that by his time, not his political actions, I could not believe he's here, he's there. He has a meeting this morning at 7 o'clock to discuss this. One day a month he gives to his time up on the Capitol for what's called interim, and I'm sure you do also, don't you, Scott? Isn't that a full, figuratively speaking, a full seating? Don't you have other meetings night and morning that are political just to keep up on things? They give enormous amount of time. They are not paid. They give, give, give. Express gratitude to them. Don't call them up and bitch and moan and groan. Call them up and say thanks once. And by the way, do I have a bone to pick with your, I want to say speaker, and that isn't what you call him. And I can't think of his name now. Senate. Who's head of the Senate? Lane. Do I have a bone to pick with Lane, or did he on the following day express my gratitude?
He did.
Thank you. Hey, you see, he's a Republican. He did his job. But please, ladies and gentlemen, call them up and give them some gratitude. They deserve it. They give an awful lot. I guess that's all I have to say. Do we have any questions for any of the panel? Over here. Okay.
A 100 years ago, when there was a very similar situation, it seems, the First Presidency very concerned about politics in Utah, and the danger of what they understood very well was a kind of constitutional crisis. They understood our Founding Fathers, and I think the inspiration of the Constitution was not in the content, but in the process. That our country is what it is and free because of a process of checks and balances and of developing what has been called a constitutional culture, where two parties in constant dialogue with each other keep each other honest and develop better ideas in that interplay than they ever would by themselves. They were worried about what Cheryl referred to as the danger of transmuting the old system of a People's Party, all Mormon, and a liberal party, all non-Mormons, simply into the national politics, with all the Mormons becoming Democrats and all the Mormons becoming Republicans, because it was Republicans who had led the national attack on the church precisely over the issue of freedom. Should people be free to practice their religion, polygamy, or should they be constrained by law? The First Presidency, as we know, made an effort to bring about a kind of division and political balance and getting away from identification of religion with politics. Whatever happened in the process, I find it interesting that in writing to their Democratic friends in in Washington who couldn't understand. They were appalled. They'd been working for statehood with the church, thought the church were their friends, and suddenly the church is trying to get people to be Republicans. They wrote explaining why. They said, "Our liberties will always be greatest if the political parties are nearly equally balanced." That was their explanation. That is, I think, the principle lying behind Elder Jensen's statement. I think it's too bad that it's been turned into an attack on the Republicans. It wasn't, and we Republicans should not be defensive about it. I think he was trying to articulate that same principle, that if we understand politics and our country's history at all, we understand we're better off in a state or a nation when there is a near balance of the parties, so they keep each other honest, and our liberties will be greater. Whenever any party, Democratic or Republican, gets up to 85% majority and gets identified with religion, the rights of minority are in danger. No matter how enlightened we may feel we are as Mormons, we can be guilty of the same thing. There was a letter in the Salt Lake Tribune just a few years ago that captured the danger for me perfectly. Obviously a Mormon, writing about a current issue in the state, said, "We Mormons were driven out of Illinois, Missouri, because of our religious choices. Now we're in Utah, and we're in charge, and if you don't like it here, you can leave." That's the danger of mixing a religious attitude with a political majority. I think we should take it very seriously. I really believe that Mormons, if they really understand what our faith is trying to say to us and the Constitution is trying to say to us, wherever we are, would try to join the minority party to strengthen it and to bring it up so that we would have closer to that ideal situation that the First Presidency called the best one for our liberties, when the two parties are very close together.
I neglected. I really should give the panel first opportunity to speak. Does anybody have any comments here?
I've never been a legislator. I have been a school board member for 12 years, but I think this is what happens, and this is why majoritism is bad. And it happened to the Democratic Party in the South. When you have the majority that you do, you don't have to satisfy 50% of the people. When you go into a closed caucus, that's all you got to do is satisfy 50% of your party. And if you got a liberal group in the Republican Party, they don't have the opportunity. I remember a time when my state president was the Speaker of the House, and their caucus decided this is the way we're going to vote. And by the way, he was the author of the financial funds that come to schools. What's it called? Career ladder money. And he, after the Republican Party caucus said, "This is where we're going to vote," he went out and voted the opposite way of the Republican Party and put his vote up first. He ruined himself politically as far as ever becoming governor in the state went by doing that. It took a lot of courage to do that. You can't do that when you got balance.
And a light blue shirt and... Okay, I have been to the last 7 or 8 state conventions, and I have never heard of the National Rifle Association being present, and they have never talked to me about politics. If they did that, in fact, I knew nothing of it, and my name has been on the ballot from the caucuses forward. They may have done it from monetary gain, but I do not believe it takes place as to the delegates, and the delegates are the ones who make the decision. You know, you can dump all the money you want into a political campaign, but in November they count votes, not dollars. And the same holds true at the convention. They may have said that, but if they did say that, they said they would vote with the NRA for in exchange for money. And that is not correct to do such a thing. Were you Democrat or Republic, you should not sell your vote for someone. Now, and I am a firm supporter in lobbyists.
They add much. They do a lot of research. The woman right behind you in the red... Rob, and then I've been told we must clear the building.
I don't want to minimize what you're saying because it's a significant issue, but if I could be flippant for a moment, which is my want in life. The last time I went for a temple interview, recommend interview, and they asked me if I supported the brethren, I asked how many. Can I also put one other conversation here? I hope you realize or remember that when the Constitution was written, political parties were not part of the mindset that they were using. Political parties have been superimposed upon that structure. So the basic freedoms should be a fundamental separation of powers issue between executive, legislative, and judicial branches. And if those three branches maintain a balance of power, then theoretically, then our rights and privileges as Utahs or as Americans should not be infringed upon. And I just want to put that in a context that there are different ways in which you can look at political parties. And I think perhaps the way Speaker Brown approaches the legislature and the way I approached it are classic examples of that. To me, I saw it as a very partisan approach, so that I was working very closely with Governor Leavitt to try and do a Republican approach to government. He sees it in a very different view, that it's a legislative versus an executive issue. There's a little bit more friction there. I don't think either one is bad. I don't think it's wrong. It's just it's a difference in style. And I hope we don't get past the idea that you can... That the parties have not been superimposed and they have to work within that framework. But even if there were no parties, theoretically, that framework should still exist for freedom. I'm sorry to take so long.
Thank you. One other comment that relates to this, I believe, and that's the Utah issue. We in Utah are this, we in Utah are that. And as relates to the church, if we pass a no-smoking amendment, the Mormons are trying to jam the word of wisdom down your throat. Now, the most stringent smoking provisions in state law are in California. In 1967, when we moved to New Jersey, you couldn't smoke on a public bus. I don't know what the Mormons in California and the Mormons in New Jersey back in 65 had to do with it, but I'm sure that the Mormons were jamming it down their throat. But if we do it something in Utah that we don't like, regardless of why, it's a church jamming it down our throat. I think a lot of that is the case here. I don't know, but I look back at the history and see a lot of this, and I don't think Utah's near as Republican as people think. And by the way, as far as parties go, I think you're not a party member unless you donate money to your party, you put lawn signs up, you get out and campaign. I think you're one who aligns himself and votes with the party. You're not part of the party. Now, again, I express gratitude to those on the panel. What? We're told by the boss it's time to go. We'll now hear the closing song by, and I've turned the page, by Lee and Bing, and followed Susan Werner will give the closing prayer. Again, we thank you very much. The end isn't occurred until after the prayer. Keith Norman, would you please see me before you leave the room?
Dear God, we're grateful unto Thee this day for the opportunity of being here and participating in Sunstone Symposium. We appreciate the people who have come to discuss with us tonight their ways of serving in their communities and in their state. We pray that we might be able to come to Zion in our own hearts to find ways to serve people that will be most beneficial to those in need. And we say this in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.